If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Hey, what episode was that? Last episode of the episode where we were giving Doug shit? That was hilarious.
Oh, dude.
That was so,
so
funny.
funny. It was so funny. And then, so, Doug, are we recording? Good. Oh, someone tell a story.
Okay. It's the worst when you ask that.
I have to ask.
You should never ask that. Doug just knows
we
to
have
do
to
that.
Splice
yeah.
you out.
Yeah. You just. Yeah.
I don't want
to.
I don't want to.
You ask him that, and then he says, yes.
"I feel like I'll bust my nut quick," and then he's gonna. Oh, wait. Let me record, and then I can't.
I guess we should just always assume if you talk into a mic.
Pretty much. Yeah. We should just assume it's recorded. I think Doug's. I think we only a couple times have missed on that. Since then, anytime he fires these things on for us,
it's on.
Yeah. He's gotten the habit.
Well, so this is what Doug did. Doug, when we do our Q&As.
You're gonna sell them out again?
Well, no, it's a great story.
Twice?
We have there's an eagle sound.
Dick. We're gonna kick him while he's down here.
There's an eagle sound that comes along, it comes out, and it's
Sal the Ruthless.
It's the Qua Eagle, the Q&A Eagle. And he forgot to put it on one of our episodes, so we teased him about it and he was really mad. You could tell too when he listened to it.
Yeah.
The mic is pissed off.
Yeah.
This fucking guy went back.
He's a perfectionist.
The episode had been up for like 48 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
I go to listen to the rest of it because I had only listened to like, you know, up until that point, and it didn't work. I'm like, what? I had to reload it and it came up brand new again. I'm like, this fucker really took it down and put it up. It was eating you, wasn't it?
What can I say? It's the curse of perfectionism.
Hey, and that's his craft right there.
I love it.
I told you guys, what would we do if we got a kipping pull-up that snuck its way into our program? You would freak out.
It's a horrible example. Because it would never happen.
Well, I think that's how Doug feels about this. Like, it would never happen.
It did happen.
It did happen.
As I'm saying. Yeah. That's a horrible
example.
Well,
what if it did? What if we were going through, like, how did this kipping pull-up get into Matt's performance?
Like, it's more like, we had a video for this. Where the hell did it go?
That happened.
He was so angry, but it's all right.
He was. Yeah.
That's got to be the second mistake only you've made in the entire Mind Pump.
Yeah. No,
I've made at least.
So you have to hammer him a whole nother episode on it.
I know, that's what I'm going to pick on Sal right now. We've had times too where Sal writes he names exercises really funny sometimes. Like sometimes they have. Like,
you mean accurately?
Yeah.
No, not accurately.
We're going to do the front side lateral raises today, you guys.
And
I'm like, front side lateral raises?
No, that's not what I said. I said rear laterals.
Rear side
laterals. I didn't say side laterals. I said rear laterals. Rear laterals, if you go.
It was in writing.
Listen.
I can bring it.
Yeah, dude.
Listen, if you go in Arnold Schwarzenegger's Encyclopedia Bodybuilding.
This is your reference.
Come on, dude. You can't bank everything on Arnold.
By the way, did you guys see my post?
I did.
I found it.
Is that the original?
That's the original.
That's awesome, dude.
Bro, that thing is being held together by a prayer. I got it taped, and because I used to read, I must have looked through that thing a million times, and I probably read it cover to cover. Just 100
sweaty teenage palms.
Just Adam? I know you had one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever
I don't know
follow?
Where it's at anymore, though.
You don't?
No.
Mm-hmm. Pages are stuck together.
Yeah.
It sat on my coffee table at my house for years. I mean, it was that and the stack of Playboys was like the thing that was on my coffee table for.
Lost the encyclopedia. Still got the Playboys.
Still had the Playboys.
Wow. Did you
order of importance?
Did you ever follow Arnold's advanced routine that he listed in the back?
I didn't.
You never did?
No, I didn't. You know
what? As hardcore as me.
Well, because I also, you got it as a kid, so it was like more impressionable for you. I got it because it was like, I want this in my library, right? You know, that was more what I used it for. It wasn't like.
And by that time, you looked at it and you're like, oh, this is crazy.
I don't even think I can claim that I read it from cover to cover like you did either.
Really?
Yeah, no. Like, yeah, I used it as a reference and thought it was cool. Or pulled a good day. I mean, one of the best places to find exercises. You want a book that's just loaded full of.
Freeweight. I mean, all the old school freeweight and cable exercises. And there's some Smith Machine exercises in there. But that's it. There's no hammer strength. There's no plate loaded except for, what do they call weight stack loaded except for maybe leg extension and leg curls. It's all the old school equipment that existed in the 70s and 80s and nothing else. But most of it's free weights. And a lot of the free weight movements are like forgotten exercises.
Yeah, that's why I loved it.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I just looked through it yesterday because I found it. So I looked through it and I forgot. I don't even know the name of this exercise because I've only done it a few times and I haven't done it since. But it's for shoulders. And you have your arms straight up above your head with your palms facing each other with dumbbells, keeping your arms straight. And you
yes.
It's almost like a standing fly, but you're going up straight. Great front delt exercise.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot all about that.
That is weird.
It is a weird.
Yeah.
It is. I forgot all about that, though.
I love that move.
I love it. But his workout in there, the advanced program that he has in there, you want to talk about volume and frequency times a million. Like, you're working out twice a day. You're doing 20 sets per body part, and each body part's worked 3 days a week.
Yeah.
So it's like an hour workout in the morning, hour workout at night. And that's how that fucker worked out.
You gotta
dude.
Fucking get the pump.
That's, you want to talk so about nuts. Crazy recovery genes.
I know, right? Yeah. Genes, yeah.
Those guys were maniacs.
And that's still
all the genes.
That's still the problem that we have in the industry. So hormone. It started all the way back then where, you know, that's the mentality is who can come up with the most grueling, crazy routine and put it out there. And then you have all these people that are trying to fall on it that are just not genetically gifted, that are not do not have that recovery ability, nor do they most people have that kind of time, you know, where they can spend. I remember the first time like I was really getting into fitness, it was probably my third year or so into personal training, and you know, I was starting to put some decent size on me. And I remember talking to one of my buddies who was an athlete all through high school and college, and you know, he played football, and and when we were kids, he was always like the buff guy. And then I started getting into training. He got into construction and stuff like that. He started to get smaller. I started to get bigger. And so then it was always like this, us going back and forth all the time. And he looked at me one time and he was just like, dude, I just, you know, I have a career now, I have a job, I got stuff to do. Like, I don't have time to spend 2 hours in the gym every day. And I'm like, what makes you think you guys spend 2 hours
two
in the gym?
Hours.
Yeah, you can be in really good shape, bro, and not spend nowhere near that and nor that many days in the gym. Like, what makes you, I don't want to take all those supplements to be like that. I'm like, dude.
Oh, that's a big one, yeah.
But, you know, that's the misconception. Everybody sees that, and they assume, like, oh, I got to take all these supplements, and I got to work out 2 hours a day, 7 days a week. Like, I just don't care enough for that. And so they just kind of put it off as, like, it's just not for me. Like, fitness isn't for me.
Because I've always been into, you know, lifting weights, and I have a lot of cousins. There's about 9 of us, and we're all right around the same age, and we would all hang out together. So this big group of guys. Definitely would get competitive, but we all love each other. You know, great group, like I said. But I was always into lifting weights, and they would be into it sometimes, and sometimes they wouldn't. And so when they would come to the gym with me, and I'd, you know, be stronger than they would be in exercises, inevitably this is what would happen. They'd be like, well, if I took supplements, I'd be able to blah, blah, blah. I'd be able to lift them. Or they'd be like, hey, Sal, if I took supplements, how big do you think I'd be? Right. And you know what's funny? Back then, I didn't really know how to answer because I had no idea that supplements didn't really do shit. Uh-huh. Now, if somebody asks me that, because I still get that question, like, hey, how much muscle do you think I'd gain if I took supplements? I say, well, you talking about creatine or all kinds of supplements? So like, well, just all kinds of supplements. Okay, if you took a bunch of supplements, not including creatine, you'd gain 0 pounds of muscle. If you took creatine, you'd gain about 2 pounds of lean body mass, and that's about it. Yeah. And a lot of that lean body mass is from increased fluid in the muscle. And
which yeah, they should have been saying, oh man, if I only had that consistency, you know, if I was only as consistent as you.
Yeah. Yeah. When's the last time you actually did a workout, you know, worked out consistently? You know what I'm saying?
You know what I find?
All that it is.
This reminds me.
Exactly. All that it is.
This reminds me of the number one compliment I feel like I get now being a part of Mind Pump. This also reminds me too, when I was a trainer.
That you have nice eyebrows?
Yes. Pretty much that.
The right one is nice.
No, do you know what?
Do you pluck them?
Do you guys ever remember asking like your clients, like, I don't know if you guys did this. I used to do this. I used to ask my clients like straight up, like, you know, what is it that, especially with someone who's been with me for years.
Sometimes I do.
You know, why do you keep resigning with me? What makes you keep continuing training? And part of that was
you ask your clients that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Bro, that's almost like you're hanging out with some girls. Like, so I want to ask you guys, like, what do you think is handsome about me?
Absolutely. I would do that too. You know, I think.
No, that's actually smart because you want to know what you're doing right.
Yes, I want to know what I'm doing right. And the irony in it, though, is I think the number one thing, and I used to get told as a trainer, so this is just totally sucks if you're a guy who prides himself on, you know, growing as far as your knowledge and getting a better trainer, would be I counted really well. That was like the number one feedback I got. You count really well. And I'm
that's
like,
funny, dude.
Really?
What does that mean?
It's like the worst compliment you could ever give me, right? Well, then they would go on to tell me, like, you know, I've had other trainers. It was normally someone who's had many trainers before, and they're like,
you made them feel special.
Yeah, and they like, I just feel like other trainers, they just tell me what to do, and then they say, go and stop. Like, you know, I like the fact that you give me a number and you're counting and you're watching and you're keeping me motivated, counting down as I'm going through. Like,
you're just connected.
Yeah, right. It helps me through the workout. So I've now the Mind Pump thing. So what's why I told that story is why I keep getting feedback from people like about Mind Pump. And I like to ask them, like, oh, what do you really like about the show? And they're like, I save so much money on supplements now.
Everybody says
like,
that.
That's like the number one thing. I'm like, you mean all what? This, all yeah, the, all the information thing. We give. The biggest takeaway you have is like, I save so much money on supplements.
Listen, if you,
it sounds like a Geico commercial.
Listen, do me a favor. If you're listening and you're saving money on supplements, go to mindpumpmedia.com and check out our programs, because Mind Pump doesn't make shit. because supplement companies hate us.
Yeah.
So support us. Get a program. Oh, and by the way, they're awesome programs.
Right.
Do you guys find yourselves coming up with creative ways to count for your client to make it more motivating? Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
Like, you don't just go 1, 2, 3 to 10. You'll go like up to 5. You'll be like, okay, only 5 more.
Yeah.
Well, You've only got two more.
Yeah. If it's a long, like if it's a 20 rep or whatever, like I'll take like either the last 5 or I'll flip it and I'll do up to 10 and then I'll do 10 down backwards, right?
You're halfway there. Like that. Five more.
Cause like
last three. You got this.
Exactly.
Yeah, the psychology of that, you know, like, yeah, if you're going like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, somehow that's easier to take.
It's so funny. It's weird. I did not know you guys did that. Yeah. But asking you guys, as soon as I asked you, I said, I bet you they do.
Of course.
Because we've been doing it a long time and it's funny.
We're awesome.
The small trick.
Yeah, I mean, only awesome people do
end
stuff
of show.
Like that.
Yeah. It's the these little things that you pick up through experience that you find that have some effect on motivation or results. And that's one of them. Like, I'll tell someone, like, if they have 6 reps left, I'll be like, you have 6 reps. You know, that's only 3 plus 3. Like, breaking it down somehow makes people more. It's true.
He can't stop teaching.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, I'm going to gift you with arithmetic. I don't have a study for this, but I'm going to hit you with arithmetic right now.
If you didn't
let's
know,
go
that's
into
three,
social
that's
studies.
3 times 2 or 7 minus 1. Yeah. So you got 6 more to go.
And you know what's happening? They're doing the reps. They're like, fuck, what's going on? And they forget how hard this
is. Awesome. I'm learning math at the same time with Sal.
3 plus 3? I never thought of that.
I don't do that. But I think it's actually an important thing to talk about, because this was probably, I would have to say, the number one thing that I tried to drive home to trainers that I got the most pushback on. So some trainers, they've got their style or their way of teaching or coaching their clients. And when I'd inherit these guys or girls, they wouldn't want to break that. And they would think that's such a simple little thing, and they wouldn't care enough to do it. And I would try and beat it into them that, listen, you have no idea. It's the smallest little thing for you to do that, and it matters so much. And even though the client's not telling you that, as the boss, like, I get this feedback. I know this. You got to trust me that you got to count.
Yeah, this is very ego, very much an ego thing, like for trainers, because like you don't want to. I don't know. There's sort of like this weird thing when you see another trainer counting, like, oh, he's fucking counting. You know, and I got a lot of shit for that too, because I counted, you know, for my clients and, you know, was a little more vocal, but then like in another environment where like none of the trainers are counting, you know, and all that.
I bet right over at your other place, I bet nobody does.
Nobody does that. So
because
it's just like you said, like the client likes it.
Yes.
So, you know, what the hell does it matter? You know, with all these other.
It's because of the old stigma that, oh, a trainer just counts for you. That's all a trainer
does.
That's
what it is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's, here's the thing. What you're really doing is you're giving them feedback. You're showing them that you're watching and that you're connected to what they're doing. It's no different than when someone's talking to you. One of the best things you can do is you can nod your head or give them some kind of feedback that you're connected to what they're saying.
Yeah.
Eye contact is part of it, but the other part of it is like someone's talking to you, just you kind of nod along or you smile or you give them a little bit of nonverbal feedback because it makes them feel like you're paying attention, you're involved. When you're counting for your client, a lot of that's a lot of times what you're doing. Like, oh, he's watching me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I actually think it's more of this. I don't think the trainers don't do it because of those reasons. I think they don't do it because they think it's not as important. And there's some truth to their argument. So especially when you talk about trainers like Justin's. Justin has a lot of educated trainers in the facilities.
Yeah, those are very high caliber trainers.
Yeah, super intelligent guys. Yeah. So it's not a lack of them not thinking that it's more like they think that
it's
not
a pride thing.
It is. And to them, it's not important, right? Because I'm watching their form and I see if it starts to deviate, then I tell them one more or what, and I just keep them going like that. And so they feel like the way they're doing is a better method. And I understand that perspective because that's what I used to deal with. But that's also why I think it's always important. And here's the juggle as a trainer. We know what's best for the client. We have our goals. We have the things that we think they should be doing. But we are still in a service business. Mm-hmm. So there still has to be this fine line that you walk of doing what you know is best for the client. And then also finding a medium that, okay, I know they like this or they want this. How do I juggle that? And I think a really good trainer knows how to do kind of both. And those that are
it's a good point because you bring up service. Like, that's why a lot of times, like, you're you have to really read the person, and you have to read them when they're first coming to you. And like, you want to make sure that, you know, you're meeting their expectation and you're exceeding it. And so, like, I'm not going to be like super abrasive as far as like, if they have an idea of like, well, you know, I used to like train really hard and this, and I'm like, okay, you know, I understand that. Like, I'll take them through like something that's like, you know, they might have some familiar feel to it, but it's not at that level, you know? So it's like, I know that they're into that. You know what I mean? I'm not going to just take it away because I know.
Well, it's like an addict. You can't just take it cold turkey. If you've been training.
This is the hardest part of being a trainer. Yeah. Yeah, this is literally the hardest part, is being able to do what you know that they need while giving them kind of what they want. Right. I'm experiencing this right now at the gym that I train at, the place that I used to own. There's a trainer that comes in there, and I don't want to, you know who he is, Justin, but I'm not going to put his name out because I didn't tell him I would.
Mm-hmm.
But he's an excellent trainer. He's a very, very good trainer, especially when it comes to strength, you know, building strength and you know, foundational kind of power. Because I observe, I always watch other trainers. I'm always trying to learn. And this guy knows his shit. And he's training a young lady that's competing in the pageant world. I don't know if you guys have ever been in the pageant world before.
Okay. Right.
Fucking nightmare, by the way. Worst industry that I've ever worked in or serviced in my entire life, which is a whole another story. But anyway, he's training this young lady, and she's only, I believe she's 19 or 18 years old, and she's a pageant competitor. So she came in very deconditioned, right? Didn't eat properly, was just about being skinny. And he's an excellent trainer. So he's having her deadlift and squat and overhead press and use kettlebells, and she's building strength. And she came in, first off, very underdeveloped posterior chain. So glutes and hamstrings were poor. She had strong anterior pelvic tilt. Shoulders are forward, kind of look, just, you could tell she's deconditioned.
Mm-hmm.
After training her now, he's been training her now for months, her glutes developed, hamstrings developed, her waist is tighter, her posture's better. I bet you she's either the same weight or even heavier, even though she's leaner now because she's put muscle on.
Mm-hmm.
So he's training her. She's getting stronger. She's getting legit strong. I mean, 19-year-old girl, I saw her pull 200 pounds with a deadlift. So she's getting strong.
Wow.
And her mom comes in and works out there. And her mom came in, and her mom trains with the new owner. So they're working out together, and they always talk, right? And I hear her mom say this. She goes, yeah, you know, my daughter, you know, she's enjoying her training, but her dresses don't really fit anymore, and she's kind of getting too big in the hips, and, you know, maybe you should talk to so-and-so trainer. He needs to change his training because she needs to be smaller, not bigger. Now, mind you, she's not bigger. She's smaller because she's leaner. She just has more muscle now, and she looks like she works out now. And by no means does she look like a female bodybuilder in any sense. She doesn't even look like a bikini competitor at this point. She just looks fit and healthy now. Mm. But you hear the mom complain about that, and it's like, oh, you got to deal with that now. Like, how do you deal with that parent or that person? It's like, okay, no. Where your mind at is completely wrong.
Right.
And I know what you think you want, but that's shit. Yeah. And so we're going to go, this, like, what do you do with that?
You know? How do you counter that? Because that's, anything that she wants is going to be an unhealthy solution, you know?
Completely. Like what are you going to do? Like, put her through shit tons of circuits and have her run and starve herself.
Dude,
and
so that corsets and do all that bullshit.
She'll look worse, and she'll get, at 19 years old, you'll destroy her metabolism.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, her mom has a completely unhealthy relationship to food and alcohol, because I can hear how she talks about it. So I'm like, this is a bad situation. It's not
good. Just bad all around, because then, you know, and then she's so vested in her, like, it's like she's trying to develop her daughter in a certain way. It's like, no, let her make her decisions.
Let me tell you about that world, bro. I trained a competitor, a local competitor, in the pageant world, and she did very well with my training, and I had to reverse a lot of horrible habits. It is like starving yourself, bulimia, you know, binging, purging. It's very prominent in that whole world. It's like a secret, underground secret. Mm-hmm. There was a doctor that a lot of them would go to, and he would prescribe them, you know, drugs that would suppress their appetites. These are teenage girls. I was blown away, and I told her, if I'm going to train you, you do any of that shit, I'll stop training you. If I see your performance drop at the gym because I think you're starving yourself, or I can tell you're taking, you know, drugs or whatever, I'm just not going to train you anymore. So she stuck it out. Anyway, she did well. So then everybody's like, who's your trainer? This guy over here, you know, Sal. Mm-hmm. So now I'm getting invited to do these fitness seminars for these girls. So I was already like, I don't want to get in this industry because I'll just piss everybody off. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. If I see something unhealthy, I'm telling them.
Yeah.
But I agreed. I went and did a fitness seminar for them. And you're talking about girls between the ages of 14 to 17. Okay. So I'm talking about
right in your wheelhouse.
I'm talking about. I mean, it's just horrible when you say that.
Justin, the coffee just came out.
Came out my nose.
So I'm doing this seminar, and they're all there with their moms and their parents. It's all moms and daughters. So I'm doing their, you know, going over nutrition, talking about proper nutrition, talking about, and you know, showing them exercise and why you want to build muscle. One of the mom raises her hand in the back because it's the Q&A part, right? She raises her hand. She's like, yeah, can you please explain to the girls why that apples also have calories and that you don't want to eat an apple all the time because it's got calories in it. And I'm looking at her and I was like,
You can excuse yourself.
Do I drop kick her?
Yeah.
So I told her, I said, here's the deal. I said, we're dealing with teenage girls. I said, number one. Number two, can you overeat apples? Yeah, but it's pretty hard. You'd have to have a really
serious poor, apple addiction.
You'd have to have a serious apple. And I said,
what are you doing over there, Adam? Oh, I'm having an apple. How many you had today? Well, it's 27.
Yeah. So
like a woodchuck.
I told the mom. I said, your kids are all teenagers. I said, the vast majority of what they learn through nutrition is not going to be through me. It's going to be through watching how you guys eat. And I looked at the mom who was obese. And by the way, most of these mothers were pretty massive. I think
she has like 60 apples a day.
Yeah. Then afterwards,
trough.
When everything was over, one of the moms walks over with one of her daughters who's like 15 years old. And she goes, oh, Sal, thanks. Great seminar. She goes, so can you help my daughter? Because she needs to lose more of this. And she grabs her daughter's like midsection and squeezes it.
Oh, no.
And she needs to lose this. And she grabs her inner thigh.
Oh, my God.
So I said, you know what? I said, let me talk to you separately.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk to you to kind of give you some. And I told her exactly how I felt. And I said, you are creating a major body image issues with your daughter. I said, if you ever ask a question like that to me again and grab your daughter like that again, I said, I'll embarrass you. And I left. And guess who never got invited back to do another fitness seminar?
Okay, moving along from that trainer.
Yeah.
That's why we don't do any more corporate events. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, speaking of
relationships with food.
Yeah. What a great topic that to kind of get into.
It's been a while since we talked about that.
You know, I think it's funny because for me, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but fasting properly really helped me with that.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice that?
Yeah, that's the first thing that really showed me. It enlightened me as far as like how much do I really need to be eating, A, and then also like this, the whole rituals behind food and like how like we're so marketed that it has to be, you know, in this order and it has to be this way. And we build and develop our entire day around these eating schedules. It's crazy.
It is. And we have to say this. I think the reason why we've had such an impact from fasting is because our poor relationship with food was not under eating. It wasn't like we were starving ourselves.
Let's get it out there. Yeah. I ate a lot of Carl's Jr.
Yeah, we overate
in college.
And we overate frequency. Like we ate, you know, 6, 7, 8 meals a day and we ate a lot. So fasting helped correct that for us, because you wouldn't recommend fasting to someone who doesn't eat.
Well, I think that's important.
Like, you're already doing it.
Because I think someone who's listening, who's never experienced it or has never even attempted to do any sort of fasting at all, is probably listening going like, well, how the fuck does that help you with a relationship with food? That sounds like a starving your body sounds like a weird thing.
Right.
It's a great point.
So I think it's important to understand that, first of all, and I just said it right now, starving your body, you're not starving the body.
No, there's a proper way to do it.
Yeah, there's a proper way to do it. The body, and this is like why it was so big for us, like Sal just said. I was the guy who was so afraid that if I didn't have something to eat every few hours, my body would just tap into muscle and start burning muscle up. Mm-hmm. And I felt that way because I felt like I looked that way too. And what I mean by that is I could go like a day where I just got busy, you know, and I fell off my routine of eating my 6 to 8 meals a day and making sure everything's regimented out all right. So, and then the next day I'd wake up and I would have this, I would look like, I would lose weight. I would have lost a couple pounds on the scale. And I would look flat. I look like I have less muscle on me. But in reality, it has so much to do with what's going on water weight wise, and that was getting in my head. For a guy who was trying to build muscle, that was enough for me to get scared to death. You know, like, oh my God, look at one day of missing some meals. Look what happened to me.
Exactly.
Like, imagine if I did a couple of days of this. Like, this is just, I got to make sure I get my meals. And so I used to preach to that all the time. Got to get your meals. Got to make, don't miss your meals. Every 2 to 3 hours, get my meals. Or else the muscle would just go right off my body. And it took a long time for me to break that. And it took me to really dive into intermittent fasting and do a lot of reading and research on it and go, okay. And then not only doing that, but then like biting the bullet and saying, okay, not only am I going to just attempt to do this, I'm going to incorporate it for a while and really start to pay attention to how my body responds. And when I realized that, okay, I wasn't just losing muscle overnight. In fact, you know, after a couple of weeks go by of me implementing fasting on a regular basis, I started to notice, like, wow, I'm actually just losing body fat. And as soon as I would refeed the body full of calories, I would fill right back out. So it wasn't muscle that was falling off my body. My body was burning fat. It wasn't burning muscle.
That's exactly the experience I had. It's like, as soon as I tried it, I was like, oh my God, I don't have to eat all the time to build muscle. And I actually started even getting better results in the gym.
Well, yeah, right. That was the stuff that was really
performance aspect. Yeah, yeah, that was huge for me, especially to train with intensity, like not just on a day where I'm on a lower to moderate intensity, but on a high intensity type of a day where I'm doing these heavy compound lifts. I was a little bit like nervous about it. Like I was always thinking that, well, I need to have some kind of carbohydrate to really drive me through this and provide the type of energy I need to produce enough of to perform well, to get through this lift. And, you know, so just stepping outside of my comfort zone, decided to start doing it. And, you know, there was a couple that it took for me to really realize that, like, oh, my God, like, no, I have just as good energy. And then the more frequently I did it, I had even more energy. So it was a trip. I was just how does this work?
This reminds me of when I get a non-fitness client. Because I think the problem of eating too much and too frequently is really relegated to the people who are pretty hardcore into fitness, right? But the average person, this reminds me of like a client, like a female client that will come in and I'll have her eat more. And she's afraid because she thinks she's just going to blow up. And then all of a sudden she does it, and then we check her body fat, and it's like, oh, you went down 0.5%, but you gained 1 pound of muscle, and you're stronger in the gym. And all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, I didn't gain all this body fat. Mm-hmm. Like, this is crazy. And you can see that relationship to food within them switch at that very moment. Like, yeah, at that very moment they realized, holy shit, I'm not going to blow up like I thought I would. I have someone I'm helping right now. She's actually a forum member. I kind of helped her privately a little bit. And she's been staying at like around 1,300 calories, and she checks in with me like, what should I do next? Should I drop? She's trying to get leaner. Should I drop? And I told her, I said, okay, how's your performance in the gym? She's like, I'm stronger. I feel better. I'm like, how's your weight? She goes, the same. I said, but how do you look? She goes, I think I'm getting leaner. She's like, what do you want me to do? I said, I want you to add 100 calories every single day next week. And I'm pretty sure she tripped out for a second that I said that. She's probably expecting me to bring it down a little bit.
She had like a shock. Yeah.
Because again, it's that relationship to food that you develop that, you know, becomes unhealthy, and it can go in either direction. The other breakthrough for me with food was paying attention to things that had nothing to do with my weight or body fat percentage or muscle. You know, paying attention to things like my skin. You know, like I would get every once in a while when I'd take especially a hot shower, I'd get some hives, random hives on my body. Mm. And I didn't know what the fuck it was. I had no idea.
Usually
it wasn't
herpes, but.
Yeah, it was probably. I'm like, do I have an STD again?
It's only once a year.
But I realized it was when I ate certain foods that would cause me to have, that I would have an intolerance to. And when I'd remove those foods, I didn't get those hives. Now, those foods, I'll tell you, are egg whites. Okay. Now, I love eggs. So, for a second, I said, well, who cares? It's a little bit of hives, no big deal. And then I said, you know, I should pay attention to these responses that my body's having, because it's got to have, that's just the visible thing that I can see. There's got to be other things that are happening under the surface that I might not be able to identify. So why don't I avoid egg whites for a while and see what happens? And sure enough, digestion was better, less bloat, and I feel better when I don't eat egg whites performance-wise. So that was a big one for me too, was just paying attention to those other signs that I see.
Well, that's a great point, because this is something that I try and coach to a lot is, you know, it's tough because when I virtually coach, I'm asking for daily weight from people. So I'm asking them to weigh themselves, which kind of goes against my philosophy of training, that it's weight is not an issue and weight is not what I want you paying attention to. I use it as like an indicator for me on whatever I'm doing, whether I'm adding food or calories, and I don't want to see this huge flux in weight. I want to see him kind of he or she maintain a little bit. So I'm using it as like a home base for me, but it really doesn't matter. So I always got to remind them that, you know, I know you, I'm having you send me your weight, but I don't really care about the weight. I care. Tell me how you feel. Like, you know, do you feel strong? Do you feel energetic? How do you feel after you eat these foods that I have you eating right now? Do you like it? Is it conducive to your lifestyle? Like, these are all things that we have to talk about and discuss, because there's so much more to health and fitness than just a specific goal that you're trying to reach and achieve. Because it is, it's about maintaining that. Nobody ever said, I want to get super ripped and shredded, or I want to build muscle, or I want to look a certain way to fit in this dress just so I could go back to where I am at right now. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to get there and they want to stay there. And if you really want to stay there and you want to live in that place, that health, that balance, that look, whatever it is you're trying to achieve, then there's so much more to that than just following some sort of a plan that someone lays out for you. And a lot of that is the relationship that you have with food. And another analogy I give people is thinking of it like a car, like an engine, and all the things that are so important to the engine as far as the timing, the oil, the gas, the, you know, everything has got to be fueled up, oiled right. You need to have all your levels out balanced for the body or for the car to run properly. And you start taking those things away or not giving the engine that, it doesn't perform right. Mm-hmm. It may still run. It may still get you from point A to point B, but it's not going to run efficiently. It's not going to at its highest level. So your body's the same way too. I mean, you can get away with not feeding it properly and it still can show you some results or get you from point A to point B, but it's not going to run efficiently for you. And teaching people how to get their bodies to run efficiently first and be healthy and balanced is so important to that.
That reminds me, I was just trying to kind of look for a good definition. I found one, but it's not really that great. But like, that's why I've always really liked that word nourish, because it's like the only one I can think of to tell somebody, like, what do I need to do for a diet? You know, what do I need to do for my body? Like, how do I pay attention to all these signs and signals? And, you know, you have to find the foods that nourish your body, that I guess the definition was to provide with the food or other substances necessary for growth, health, and good condition. It's just basically thinking more in terms of like, you know, what is going to benefit me, you know, internally, which is then going to reflect my exterior body is a reflection of that.
Right. And let's get real deep here. Let's think about all the things that are associated or come with food. There's the obvious, right? The nutrients, the macronutrients, proteins, fats, and carbs, the vitamins and minerals, the phytonutrients, all the little compounds that affect the body on a physical level. But that's not where we stop. There's much more to food than that. And if you disagree with me, then all you have to do is look at any celebration, look at every meal, look at any time you do something with people, it's centered around food, because food means much more than just those physical nutrients.
Oh, such a psychological part.
There's a psychological, emotional component to it as well, which is why we talk about health and fitness all the time. People sometimes get the impression that we're food Nazis. Incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
There are definite benefits to celebrating a big, you know, event. Like, oh my God, you just, you know, it's your birthday. Have some cake. You know, does cake nourish you on a physical level? No, it's not good for you. Does it maybe nourish you on an emotional, psychological level? Mm-hmm. It might, because you're celebrating something. Like, you don't want to be in the opposite extreme where everything is absolutely perfect because that's all you ever care about and you're stressing yourself over it.
Right.
Because that is also an unhealthy relationship with food. So there are times when I'll go and enjoy myself. You know, I took my mom out to dinner last weekend, and she's going to be out of town now for a little while, so I'm not going to see her for about a month. So we enjoyed, you know, we enjoyed ourselves with the food. We had some bread, and we had some, you know, we had a little bit of alcohol, and we split a dessert. And, you know, for me at that moment, my relationship to food was understanding that right now I'm using this food as a way to connect with, you know, my mom, as a way to celebrate or to, you know, to tell her I love her or whatever, you know, and that's what we have to understand. So if you're feeding yourself, if you're using that type of a connection in a poor way, let's say I feel horrible about myself, I'm depressed, I'm stressed out.
Yeah.
Let me eat this donut to find temporary relief. Like, you, now you're using that in the wrong way. Just like you can use healthy food in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. So there's so much. That's when we say a healthy relationship to food. It means you understand what food is on all levels, and you knowing this, you can eat it accordingly. It doesn't mean being perfect by any way.
Well, it just helps to be more educated, you know, about the whole process.
All of it.
Yeah. So that way, you know, you can build a better relationship with it, because now you can have like rigid structure with flexibility. So the flexibility is what you're talking about. That's life. You know, you have to have that. But you still have a rigid structure that drives you.
Well, there's a big misconception with this. And, you know, this is a perfect topic for what I literally just had this conversation yesterday with one of my clients. She's been with me for coming up on 5 months now. And we've definitely changed her physique a ton, but she still has a ways to go from where she wants to be. And she's currently right now entering phase 3 of MAPS Black with me. And right where we're at nutritionally, we just came off of consuming 2,200 calories on a regular basis. And I just now reduced her down to about 1,600 calories. So, and we've had this last couple of weeks. Well, back up a couple of weeks ago, and we kind of had this, you know, little road bump for her, and she was feeling discouraged. You know, I've been doing this for this long, and I thought by now I'd look this way, blah, blah, blah. And I feel like I'm making all these sacrifices. I don't get to do this. I don't get to do that. And I said, why? You know, why do you say that? Why can't you do this, or why can't you do that? Well, because, you know, you told me when I do this, that sets me back here, and I won't see the results that I want to see this month. Well, I said, that's all it is. I said, you got to understand something. The way the body loses and adds fat to the body is a very slow, gradual process. And now, mind you, it's much easier for us to put it on, because you could literally sit down and consume 10,000 calories if you tried, you know, where you can't sit down and burn 10,000 calories. So, and you could do that in 10, 15 minutes versus what it would take time-wise to do that. So obviously it's easier to put it on, but to lose body fat, it's a slow and gradual process, and you have to first really understand that. And I said, for example, let's just take what happened, what we just did with your calories, because she was frustrated at the time. She's like, you know, I got this thing coming up Saturday, and I really want to go drink with my friends and do this stuff, but I don't want to screw it up. And I feel like you've reduced my calories. We've gone into phase 3, which is a lot more volume in black. She feels it. She notices it. And she's like, I don't feel like the weight's like coming right off of me. I said, okay, well, first of all, you know, we're reducing by about 500 to 600 calories. Plus, you just got done telling me that, you know, since I've given you more freedom with, you know, putting, you know, olive oil and adding butter to certain meals and this and that, that you haven't been calculating and being super strict about that. So maybe give yourself an extra 100 calorie buffer or more that you're probably actually consuming now that you're not tracking that or paying attention to that. So we're probably more like 1,700, but you're still in a deficit. But our deficit now is only 300-400 calories. You know how long that takes? That's going to take you 10 to 15 days before you see 1 pound of fat that could possibly come off your body. And that 1 pound of fat is distributed through your entire body. So imagine how incremental and how small that is. Plus, you're lifting a new phase of adaptation right now of your training program. So you might actually build a little bit of muscle. So you might actually put like a quarter to a half a pound of muscle on. So we're going to see maybe even the scale go up a tiny bit, or you might not see the scale move at all. And you're living in this reduction. So you think like you're failing miserably, but all kinds of great stuff's happening inside your body. It's just a much slower process than you think. And then we head into Saturday, and Saturday you want to go have a good time and enjoy yourself. Well, by all means, do that. Enjoy yourself and get right back on your program. But also keep in mind that you're just kind of prolonging that, and you're going to stretch out. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think it's the time frame that people are, they think that you can lose, because they see all this, oh, losing 30 days. And that's why, mm-hmm, I get so angry when I see those things, because I'm like, we're giving people such a bad perception of mm-hmm, really how it's supposed to work. So when they relate it to that, and then they're going through a real program done the right way for somebody, they're just so confused on, I don't understand, why am I not losing it this fast enough, or why isn't this coming to me quicker? And it's like, no, it's a journey.
Yeah. You're like, where's all these time parameters coming from?
Right.
You know, like it is. It's marketed that way because of stupid shitheads like us in the industry that, you know, they take that direction instead, and they're like, you know, yeah, I can get you this in a couple of weeks, and you're going to lose 10 pounds with me. You know, I'm like, that's crazy. Look, you're already setting them up for craziness.
Part of your job as a trainer is to educate your clients on this process. Your job is not to just give them, oh, weight loss, weight loss, weight loss, weight loss. You're not going to be a successful trainer, number one, long term, And number two, you're doing the person a complete disservice. And we have lots of evidence now to show that metabolic damage or, you know, adaptive thermogenesis in the negative happens as a result of this. Look, we used to say, and I used to say this too, if you exercise too much and you eat too little, you'll burn muscle. You're not burning muscle. You know how hard it is to burn muscle?
I love your analogy with the expensive, you know, fuel. It's like the most expensive
fuel. It's the most expensive tissue on your body, you know, aside from your brain, for example. But your body's not burning muscle for energy. Your body's making you lose muscle. It's adapting to a slower metabolism. Mm-hmm. It's trying to make itself slower. And if you lose 30 pounds in 30 days, that's what you did. You have effectively... guarantee you, if I tested your metabolic rate at the beginning of that and the end of that, you've significantly lowered your metabolism, and now you're in this really shitty situation.
Explain what you mean by that. You know, explain to people what the body is doing to make it more efficient and more conducive to all the exercise that you're giving it and the lack of food.
Right. Here's what you've told your body. You've told your body in 30 days, which in for all intents and purposes, a very short period for the body, but you've told your body, hey, you went from burning, you know, this many calories a day to now burning three times as many calories a day in 30, like we just literally ramped up your calorie burn through activity. Mm-hmm. Oh, and we've taken your food intake and brought it way down on top of it. So now your body's dealing with a situation where it's burning a shit ton more calories, mm-hmm. but it's taking in a lot less calories all at the same time.
And you're putting a ton more demand on it. So
that's what all this demand, all the stress. So now your body's saying, okay, it has to burn body fat, but it's at the same time saying, how do we make this body
more
operate
efficient
on less calories? Because we need to adapt to this crazy new lifestyle.
Right. And the way it does it. We can't give it so much energy.
That's right. And the way it does it is it makes you lose muscle.
Yeah.
It's gonna get rid of shit that's expensive. And muscle is expensive. Having a lot of muscle, unless your body
It
weighs you down. It's expensive to maintain. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of energy and blood. It's a tissue that your body will have if it thinks it needs it. Here's something you need to understand with the body.
Yes.
Your body will only ever be as strong and as muscular as the minimum it thinks it needs to be. It will never be more than that. Your body will never surpass the minimum that it believes that it needs to have.
Yeah.
It's the environment. It's the environment that you create around you that dictates to your body as to what it needs to overcome. And so, you know, if what you're doing on a day-to-day basis is sitting down and not moving a whole lot, your body's going to make that very efficient. So you're telling your body, oh, wow, I don't need a whole lot of muscle tissue, you know, to get up and down because I don't do it very often.
Right.
You know?
Or I'm so active and eating so little that rather than having this muscle, it's more efficient to just get rid of it because I need to conserve calories. But, you know, if you don't believe me, you know, here's an experiment I recommend you don't try. But if you really want to experience this yourself, this is what you do. Put yourself in bed and be bedridden for 1 week. Just lay in bed for a week and watch how quickly your body deteriorates. We're talking 7 fucking days. This is how fast your body will adapt to become more efficient in terms of activity and caloric intake. You sit down, lay in a bed, don't do anything. Your strength will plummet. And you'll lose muscle at a very rapid rate.
That's so interesting because I was just thinking about this because one of the biggest fears, you know, with old people and I've seen this happen too personally with close, you know, loved ones. Like once their hip broke, you know, you knew you only had a certain amount of time left with them.
That's right.
Because they so unmotivated to move. You know, most of their motor skills like start deteriorating like almost immediately.
So fast.
Yeah.
What you want to consider too with the elderly is that the elderly, their bodies adapt in the negative sense in terms of making them more efficient with calories, in terms of, you know, not being expensive with muscle, much faster than someone who's young. Someone who's young can get away with, you know, burning more calories. When you're older and you stop working out, like if I train a 75-year-old on a consistent basis, let's say twice a week, and they leave for a month and they come back, it's equivalent to like a 30-year-old who stopped working out for 3 or 4 months. That's what I noticed. When they come back, it's like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
We're going to start you off kind of. And they bounce back pretty quickly. But the older they get, the more that becomes, you know, evident when they stop exercising. So, I mean, these are all important things. You know, when you look at food, a healthy relationship. Here's another example. I have another very, very close friend of mine who we've, you know, I've kind of had to hammer into her that she needs to eat a little bit more and be okay with that. Well, the other day she sent me a message and she's like, hey, she's like, she was checking in with me and I said, how's your food today? And she said, well, and her target is about 1300 calories a day. She's like, well, I only ate about 1,000 calories. This was like 9 o'clock at night. So I'm like, okay, what are you going to do? She's like, well, I was going to like force feed myself some fish because I need to hit 1300. I'm like, well, what do you mean force feed? How do you feel? She's like, I'm not hungry at all. Like I feel, I said, why don't you just listen to your body? It's okay if you eat, you know, 1,000 calories today because you might be more hungry tomorrow and then you can eat 1,500 or 1,600 calories. Like this is another level of that whole relationship with food. This is why I always recommend people move their macronutrients. Don't be so regimented every single day. Don't be so regimented with your calories every single day. And by the way, when you eat this way, you actually get better results. Yeah. I've noticed it with everybody that's done this around me, where they eat, you know, instead of eating 1,500 calories every single day, some days are 1,200, some days are 1,800, but they average out to 1,500.
Well, we've been preaching for a long time now about, you know, understanding the process of adaptation when it comes to program design and training, but not a lot of people discuss the same thing with nutrition.
Yeah.
And it's very similar. It's the reason why doing the same thing, same calorie intake, same thing over and over and over every single day is not ideal. It is not ideal. Can it work? Sure, it can work. So can following the same training program. It could get you some results. But if you want optimal, it's optimal for you to be constantly rotating foods there. You know, I want to be careful, though, that, you know, we're saying this right now. And I feel like all the IFYM people are like, yeah, see, this is why we eat this way, because it's balance. And you're not always, you know, following exactly same food.
In theory, IIFYM is fine. The way it's being used is not.
Well,
I like
the term flexible dieting better.
Yeah.
You know, I think they were both attached to that.
I like flexible eating better than flexible dieting.
Yeah, yeah, not dieting. You're right.
Yeah, flexible eating is a better term for it. But here's, you know, and here's a little plug for somebody that we follow. All of us follow a guy named Jay Titan. So if you, on Instagram, you can look him up, Jay Titan. Dude is awesome. Probably one of the better people out there as far as post. He's a bodybuilder dude, very direct and straightforward with everything he talks about. He recently just got into a heated debate with Lane Norton, which was fucking...
Oh, I saw that.
That was fire.
Awesome. Fucking yeah. Awesome to read and watch him just... You know, some people, they're not... He doesn't have as soft of an approach, I think, as we do. So if you don't...
understatement.
Yeah, you know, he's probably...
If you get offended easily.
He's kind of a cross between us and Joe Donnelly. So if you like that aggressiveness that Joe kind of delivers every once in a while with our intelligence level, I think it's kind of a nice little blend, right? totally love the dude, though. Like, he's blasting Lane Norton and these IFYM people, and for the exact same reasons that we do, which is... all the chemicals and shit in food that nobody likes to talk about. And, you know, Lane likes to always defend, you know, of course, his IFYM because that's what he stands by and he's doubled down on it. But the more and more studies that are coming out, like Sal's talked about with gut flora and things like that, and we're finding more and more things are linked to cancer. And then you go through these pages of all these people that promote this, and like half of their posts are cupcakes and desserts and this and that. That is not a healthy relationship with food. It's now taking that information that we're saying right now about having balance and rotating foods, and now it's taking it to an extreme to where they're out searching for the next junk food they can fit into their macros.
Right.
And that is not any more healthy than the person who eats tilapia and fucking asparagus.
It's not like they just randomly stumbled upon it and are like, you know, I'm going to just chill for a minute and eat this because I enjoy this or whatever. It's like, yeah, like you said, they're planning actively how to fit that into their, you know, almost everyday routine.
And I hate it because once again, it gives another bad perception to that person who's scanning through that is wanting to get in shape. They see this super fit girl and, you know, she's looks great and she's strong and, you know, every other post she's posting is cupcakes and donuts and cake and ice cream and, you know, Ben and Jerry's this with, you know, all kinds of crazy, you know, artificial sweetener desserts on top of it. And it's like, that is so fucking unhealthy.
I've actually seen posts where they will post like donuts and some other junk food and they'll have it like a split screen and on the other side is like fruit and like healthy stuff. And they'll show that the macros are the same, you know, same calories, same fat, yeah, carbs and protein. And it's if they're making the argument that they're the same. They have the same macros. Yeah. So you can eat this shit over here and it's the same as eating this healthy stuff over there. It's not.
No.
It's not the same. Not even close.
Which I find is, you have to be an idiot to think that, right? To really think that, you know, six strawberries is the same thing as fucking six gummy bears.
Yeah.
Like, just because the two of them both equal the same amount of calories does not mean that they're the same fucking thing whatsoever. And any idiot that would think that, because I have yet to see a gummy bear tree. You know, I've yet to see, it's not grown naturally in nature. I don't think it's going to be even comparable to something like that. So that stuff drives me nuts. And it drives me nuts when I see that when these are fitness professionals. Like right now I'm talking about someone who they just came up on my feed. I think it was about six months ago. Do you remember when it was when we got into that little tiff with the IFYM chick?
Was her name? That was about 6 months ago.
Fit Girl Kelly or whatever her name was or whatever. You know, Sal, I think she responded to
it. It was my post.
First to your post, and then it drug kind of all of us in, and then we were going back and forth, and then of course I have to look at her page and see, and then sure enough, she happens
every picture.
Yes,
donuts,
literally, cupcake. And she hasn't stopped since we talked, which it drives me crazy a little because I felt like we had a very good, healthy debate back and forth, and try to inform her, and then I think we did a podcast.
Well, no, because her defense was like, no, I eat really, really healthy over 90% of the time. And I said, and I looked at her page and I'm like, okay, you've got, you know, 20,000 followers and I don't see any posts of healthy food. So maybe you do everything right and you've got a good relationship with food, but that's not how you're advertising yourself. And it's definitely not the message that you're sending out to all these impressionable whoever, you know, that's following you.
Right.
And anybody who's been a trainer for a very long time knows that this is a struggle. We're talking, and the reason why I bring this up, we're talking about the relationship with food. Normally people that you get, and when I get somebody who's 60 plus pounds overweight, they have a bad relationship with food, and it's different, you know, and their relationship is very similar to, and I had this conversation with another client just the other day about how crazy it is to me that, you know, because we live in this society that deems like this is a drug, this is not a drug, this is bad for us, this is not bad, you know, that they decide that they govern us and tell us what is illegal and what's legal and stuff. And so society says, oh, okay, this is good, this is not bad for me because it's legal. I can get in the grocery store and we can eat as much of it. But when you think about how much sugar and how much death is and disease is caused by the overconsumption of sugar, but yet it's completely legal and free for people to get. And then if you actually break it down even further, and I don't know if you guys, I've dealt with a lot of people either related to me or clients of mine that have battled addiction, drug addiction. I've seen alcoholism, I've seen cocaine, I've seen prescription drugs, I've seen it all. Like I've had all these people around me that I've seen battle this in my 35 years. And you know, when you listen to someone like that talk about their drug addiction, it is almost identical to listening to someone talk about their addiction to fucking food and sugar.
It's the same.
You know, first it's denial, just the same process. They don't think they have an issue. Then they realize they have an issue. And then it's like they have a handle on the issue, but really they don't have a handle on the issue. Yeah. And then they think they can kind of introduce it into their life every once in a while.
I still need it for like post-recovery.
There becomes,
it's always these things.
The same conversation is.
Dude, I'll have a client that I'll assess their food, and I'll say something to them like, "Well, you may have an issue with dairy. Let's try eliminating dairy." And they look at me like I told them,
"Oh my god, cheese! I have to get rid of cheese."
Yeah, like I have to like I just said, you have to sell your children. You know, like what will I eat now? I know I can't cut out dairy. It's like, it's fucking dairy. There's a billion other things you could eat. And you obviously have a food intolerance to dairy because by 3 p.m. you look like you're pregnant and you're farting throughout the entire workout.
Yeah, right, but they still want it.
But they're just like, I can't, it's impossible. Like, this is crazy.
Which is like talking to a meth head. Your teeth are falling out. Okay, listen, this is an issue now.
Yeah.
I know it started off as a fun Saturday thing with all your friends, right?
I'm listening to you guys and I was like, oh my god, I think I have a cheese problem. Fuck. Well, why'd you guys have to bring that up?
You know, I think I'm so passionate about it because when we did the whole ketogenic thing, it was such a huge thing for me, man. And we always talk about shattering our own paradigms, and that was one for me. I remember Sal talking about it, and I was totally teasing him. So I totally sounded like the alcoholic who's making fun of Sal because he doesn't go out and drink because you're a pussy and alcohol is so much fun. Why wouldn't you want alcohol? And you're an idiot. Like, and I remember listening to the episode after we aired it. And I went,
yeah, you're really mean.
I'm like, what a douche I sound like right now. And what a, what an addict to carbohydrate.
That was the first time you noticed? No, what?
Dick. That wasn't funny, Doug.
That wasn't funny, man.
That wasn't funny,
not
Doug.
At all.
Yeah, you know, what an addict I sounded like to carbohydrates. Yeah. And because I'm the type of person who wants to challenge myself in these ways, I thought, you know what? Fuck that. I'm going to do this ketogenic. That just
I mentioned, I'm dead honest. Like I saw this show where this guy realized that he was like dairy intolerant, and so he went to get a tattoo of a slice of cheese, right? And I was dying laughing because I was like, oh my god, I can't even imagine, you know. And it's like, wow. It really is. It's like, I love it, but it's on a weird level.
I eat, you know, I eat pretty high fat and very low carbohydrate most of the time, but I purposely, for health reasons, throw in a vegan day, or I'll have a day like today where I'm going to allow myself about 100 grams of carbohydrates because I want that metabolic flexibility. I don't want to lose the benefits of the diversity that may give my gut flora. But also, I don't want to get stuck in that crazy, you know, mind space. You know, here's something this was something I do for my kids too. We eat very healthy compared to most people. However, I know my kids live in the regular world. They live in America. They're going to be exposed to birthdays. Mm-hmm. They're going to be exposed to parties. Eventually, they're not going to live under my roof. Eventually, they're going to go do, you know, buy food on their own. And one of the worst things I could do is be so crazy strict on healthy food that when they get the opportunity to go eat and feed themselves, that they do the exact opposite and they eat shitty. So I make sure every once in a while, hey, you guys want to have a treat? Let's go get ice cream. Or like McDonald's. My kids will have McDonald's maybe once or twice a year. Why? Number one, I don't like to give them more than that because it's not very healthy. It's fast food. But number two, the reason why it's not less than that is McDonald's is fucking everywhere. And if I completely demonize it, then kids get rebellious, especially teenage kids. Yeah. And last thing I want is my kids, you know, like fuck dad. And, you know, I'm 15 years old. I got money. And now every day after school, I'm eating, you know, 10 piece chicken nugget type of deal. Mm-hmm. So these are all important, you know, strategies that we do. I do it with my kids. I do it with myself. This all falls in that category of a healthy relationship with food.
Now, we're saying all this right now, but I think it's important. And, you know, maybe you guys disagree here because we probably all coach a little bit different. But this is why I am really stringent at first with somebody with tracking at first. Because I feel like you need to do that.
You have to make them aware first.
Yes.
First, they're unconsciously incompetent. Process.
Because I feel like somebody, I feel like, you're a new listener. You just started listening to Mind Pump and you're like, you know, someone already told you, like, yeah, listen, these guys are great. They give all kinds of information. They're super good looking and super smart. I doubt everybody says that, but. Well, so someone tells you
everybody
that.
Thinks your voice is on my body.
Yeah,
so.
What's up with that? How does someone said that Justin and I they get confused. This is Adam speaking.
Yeah, there you go.
Nobody
Justin.
Apparently my voice matches my face.
You're Kermit.
Like narrow and like projected, very ear piercing. Like
I feel like we're all so distinct you would never get a space. But maybe whatever. Yeah. Whatever. Maybe you have a shitty stereo system too. Who knows? But. I make these people track at first because I think it's just it's making them aware and understand the little incremental things I'm talking about that, you know, otherwise they get in this like, oh, you know, if I didn't lose X amount by this amount of time, then whatever I'm doing must not be effective. Like, no, that's not true. I need to teach you and show you.
What you're doing is, like I'd mentioned before in a previous podcast, it reminds me of being passive, like being a passenger in the process, you know, and you're not taking ownership. So to really take ownership is to understand your habits. And if you're not going to put the effort into that arena, like, you know, just like that has to be your focus before you even get started.
Well, and the reason why I wanted to say this, because I know, like I was starting to say that we have, you know, somebody who's listening, they don't really know much about Mind Pump or heard previous episodes, and they're listening to us talk about like, you know, oh, you know, relationship with food and balance and, you know, having flexibility and different foods, you know, incorporated in there. And, you know, so we're almost preaching against like, you know, the bodybuilding world where you're tracking, you're weighing, you're counting, you're doing all those things. Which there's something to take from that I love and I appreciate and I think is very important to coaching and training, that I don't want to get that message misconstrued to people who are listening right now that think like, oh, well, I heard on Mind Pump, like, you know, that's an unhealthy relationship for me to count or track or weigh.
No, it's an unhealthy way to live for the rest of your life.
Yes.
But you have to become aware. Before you can change anything, you need to be aware of what's going on. Like, before I can fix my addiction to whatever, I need to be like, oh, fuck, I'm addicted. Or so tracking initially lets people know like, oh, wow, I didn't realize I ate that much sugar. Or, oh, wow, I didn't realize that, you know, my calories were actually that high. Or I didn't realize that when people start to write things down, that's funny. Automatically, when people write their food down, they start changing how they eat. Because they become aware of what they put in their mouth.
Yeah, a perfect example of this is, you know, and if you don't think you're somebody who doesn't, you don't think you need to do this, here's your challenge, okay? For one day, after you eat all the foods, sit down, write them down, you know, and guesstimate what you think you're consuming macronutrient-wise, calorie-wise, and see, then
blow your mind.
Yeah, then actually input that into like a Fat Secret or something like that and see what it comes out to be and see how close you really are to that. Most people are so far off, it's unreal.
Dude, we're good at it, and we are off.
Yes.
Yeah. When I went and tracked mine, I was like, wow, I didn't realize I was eating that much. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Well, listen, if you like Mind Pump, leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Don't forget to go to mindpumpmedia.com. We have the fasting guide on there that we talked about a little bit. Tells you how to fast properly. There's a nutrition guide. We also have all of our MAPS programs, which are expertly programmed in terms of working out, building muscle, burning body fat. You can also find us on Instagram at mindpumpradio. I'm at mindpumpsal. You can find Justin at mindpumpjustin. And Adam is at mindpumpadam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.